Hello, and welcome to Legal Management Talk, the official podcast of the Association of Legal Administrators. I'm your host, Justin Askenazy. As the pandemic continues to take a significant toll on firm staffing levels, outsourced labor has become increasingly integral to maintaining firm operations. Joining us today is Ben Schmidt, who is a consultant at Matterin & Associates and an expert on labor issues in the legal industry. Welcome, Ben. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
First, for those who may not be familiar, what is outsourced labor as it relates to legal firms and organizations?
Sure. So in law firms, right, you have your core practice of law, which are lawyers doing lawyer things, right? And then in the and also you have your what we would call middle or back office operations. So things like mail, hospitality work, reprographics, records activities, things like that, that are kind of happening in the background that help law firms do their business every day, but aren't necessarily the practice of law or core to practicing law, but core to the operations of a law firm.
So you recently wrote an article for law.com, and in that article, you mentioned four major ways the pandemic has impacted the labor market. What are those ways, and has any one of those factors hit the legal industry particularly hard?
Sure, yeah. So in the article, I talked about, I think some of these are not just necessarily specific to legal industry, but a lot of what you see, in the labor market as a whole. But things like the ability to work remotely, right? That's something that's really popped up as a concern amongst the labor force since the pandemic. Of course, compensation has been another factor really impacting outsourced labor. On top of that, you also have, at the time of the article, it was written as workplace safety, because at that time, and it's still, I think, still an impact, but I would maybe potentially broaden that a bit to call it workplace climate, which includes workplace safety, but also workplace conditions, things like how workers are treated, how they're managed on site, how people interact with them, things like that, in addition to workplace safety, which, during the course of the pandemic was a huge concern, because a lot of these job functions require folks to be on site day to day. So in essence, they're kind of treated as frontline workers. And when there was so much uncertainty, brewing around COVID and vaccines and adoption of vaccines, efficacy of vaccines, variants, all the things that are still very much in play today, with a little more data and science, coming out daily about those things. But that's why I say I think it kind of morphs more into what I would call workplace climate, because it includes more than I think just workplace safety. And then the fourth one, I would term sort of, career and life goals for these employees. People don't want to have a job where it's just going in to punch a ticket. I think that the pandemic, as has been much discussed, has resulted in people kind of wanting a little bit more out of their life and career than simply coming into the job just to do a job. And to answer the second part of your question, which was, have any of these impacted more than the others? I'd say that, that's a difficult one to answer, because I think all of them have had some measure of impact, and in many cases it's very much an individual thing of what drives you and what causes you to want to to stay. But if I had to pick one, I think I would actually kind of pick that workplace climate, because, you know, all things being equal, you know, what's going to separate your day-to-day life and job from other things? And I think that kind of boils down to workplace environment climate. You know, if you're looking at compensation at A and B being roughly approximate, you know, here remote capabilities to date are not really are not as much of a possibility. And then, you know, career and life goals, you know, that is, I would say, is an impact, but I think overall environment, I think, would probably be, you know, the single most important factor right now.
So during the Great Resignation, as it's come to be known, employers, including service providers, have been hard pressed to fill open positions despite a large number of candidates. What are providers doing wrong?
So some of this ties into what I was referencing before, but, you know, since the article was written and continuing on, you know, the trends that were touched upon in that article are as relevant today as they were then. You know, not that the article was, you know, ancient, it's only, you know, a couple of months old, but the data continues to roll in that we have, you know, in many instances, there's some industry variances, right? But in general, sort of macro level, you're looking at two job openings for every one person looking for a job. And so, you know, kind of it begs the question of, okay, so what's happening here? Why are, you know, these service providers are, and I continue to see them as I go through more and more material with my clients and sitting in with these providers, that they still have statistics that they'll throw out, such as, you know, turnover numbers that can range, you know, upwards of into the mid 30% in terms of the constant turnover there. So with all these openings and the number of employees and turnover and all these things are kind of going into the stew. So why is it that they're having so much trouble filling positions? Well, so, I mean, of course, competition is fierce, right? There are a lot of similarly situated roles across many different industries, you know, not just legal outsourcing, but, you know, you could also look at outsourced labor for companies, non-legal. You could look at other companies such as, you know, your big box stores or Amazon or places like that are all kind of paying people, compensating them in the same world. So you kind of have to look and dig down the next level. And that's what I was talking about with sort of that workplace climate. And I think that's where these employers, these outsource providers, I think that's where they are trying to get better, but I think that's where they're currently missing the mark, you know, in terms of offering the things such as, you know, connecting to a career path. And you know, a lot of times it's not always known that there is a career path when you join these providers. It, you know, you may come in as someone who's running mail, you know, between for the firm, but and that may not sound necessarily glamorous or exciting to someone, and I think that leads to the next part where I think, you know, they could be doing, you know, as an example of an area where they could be getting better, which is sort of connecting purpose, you know, like why is it the why of what you're doing, and why is it important. You know, why are you doing the things you're doing? And I think these are areas where there is some recognition there. And I have seen providers trying to address things like that. But, you know, for a long time, I think there was a lot of failure in terms of digging that extra layer down and not just simply saying, you know, here's your job, here's the benefits, and, you know, have at it. You know, I think there's what potential employees are looking for today is deeper than that. And so, you know, as a employer, you need to dig deeper and address those concerns.
All right. So we've talked about problems. You just alluded to some solutions, but you've also talked about one solution as being expanding the labor pool. Mm-hmm. So how can providers do that, and what effect would it have?
So, sure. So one of the things I was referencing was specifically something called the backfill labor pool. So in all outsourced service providers have a backfill labor pool, and they all have their own internal math about, you know, how many backfill employees do you need per on-site employees. And that ratio can vary, you know, from company to company, market to market. And, you know, there's a lot of complicating factors that go into deciding how many backfill employees you have per market. I think by increasing that pool, what you do is you are, because, you know, if you start looking at some of those additional things that people are looking for, like flexibility, PTO, the ability to kind of come into work maybe an hour or two late in order to address some family issues or childcare provider issues, things that have become very important now, especially, you know, if your daycare provider needs to shut down because of a COVID-related exposure or things like that. You know, there's not a lot of safety net there. So, and anyway, being able to provide perks like that through having an increased backfill pool is what I was referencing. So by increasing the backfill pool, you are then able to tell your employees, hey, look, we've got you covered by having more backfill people. And so if you need to take an hour or two off here, we can send someone there to cover your position while you go address your personal need. And I think that during the course of the pandemic, a lot of these backfill pools, which were sort of rigorously defined in terms of the ratios, got decimated because during the pandemic, people didn't want, you know, either unvaccinated or unknown quantities, unknown employees showing up into their environment because of the concerns about transmissibility of the virus and so on. And so providers are sort of fighting it on two fronts. One, you've got employees who are looking for more flexibility, which necessarily means you need more backfill. And two, they decimated their backfill pools during the pandemic to begin with. And now they need to hire these people, which again feeds into the whole thing of, well, we're having trouble hiring people to begin with. So, you know, there's some issues there that need to be addressed. But at the end of the day, what I would say is they need to look at those ratios and probably offer a little bit more to their employees in order to allow them to have some of those flexibility perks that employees want.
Right. Another solution is searching for candidates who have the skills to do work that would previously have been handled by multiple employees. What are the benefits and limitations of this kind of jack of many trades approach?
So for years and years now, providers have, I don't want to say they paid lip service to a notion called cross-training. I think there's been some genuine efforts made towards cross-training employees. And what I mean by cross-training is your core function may be reprographics, but you also know how to do the mail, right? So you know both functions. As we move forward, right, and the notion of a traditional office space is morphing to what that end game is. You know, I don't know that we could say there's an end game. I think it's always going to be in flux, but we're morphing into something different than it was in 2019. And so when you have these office spaces where a lot of employers are saying, well, hey, a great way for us to kind of look at costs is, do we need to have the physical footprint that we have today? In many cases, that's no. We can look at more flexible space, more hoteling-like arrangements, because we're only having 30% of our workforce come in every day. And that's the decision we've made as a firm, is to allow that. So when that sort of thing happens, the demand for on-site services changed and is changing. And so where if you may have needed 10 people before, just because of the sheer volume of people there requesting on-site services is different. Now those people are requesting services from remote positions. And so the volume of work is either less or different, not necessarily more, but it could be different in kind. So it might be more digital now than physical. So you need to start looking at employees who are able to handle a wide range of capabilities. And that might mean, you know, someone who is trained to do many things, right, rather than just one thing. And so I think service providers are looking at that model, but there are, you know, in smaller run sites, you know, where you might have a smaller footprint, where you only have maybe you have two people, three people running these services. That's kind of always been the case. They've always been these very multi-tool employees, because with fewer employees, you can't kind of lean on someone else to be more specialized. And these bigger sites, where again, you're seeing the size of the office change and the type of work change, that's where that you're going to see more of that, where you're probably going to see the number of people reduce, because there may not be as much physical space to address, for one. And two, the kind of work is just changing, which requires a different kind of worker, which, you know, so at any rate, so we're looking at more multi-tool individuals who can handle a wider range of things. Now, that person might be a more highly compensated employee, but if you're looking at, you know, five employees versus 10, and those five are more highly compensated, it's probably in the end beneficial to you anyway. Now, in terms of limitations to that, you know, I don't know that I'd say the limitation there is, you know, predicting the future. I think there are still a lot of firms out there who are saying, this is where we are now, but we can't say where we're going to be in 5 years, because, hey, look what the past 5 years brought us. And so are we setting ourselves up for work that's not going to be, or for a style of working that's not going to be relevant in another couple of years? And at the end of the day, I don't know that that's really even a valid limitation, because the nature of these contracts and these engagements that you have with service providers allows you to be pretty flexible in terms of hiring or reducing staff. So I don't know that I see a whole lot of downside to having the multi-tool player as opposed to sort of more siloed and larger workforces.
Sure. So you've talked about how, you know, more and more things are going remote, and in your article you raised an interesting point about moving a firm's service needs offsite. What would that look like, and would firms still be able to retain the efficiency that on-site services provide?
Sure. So the, you know, the next step in terms of this new way of working remote is, if you a lot of law firm work just in general. Now, there's some things that kind of require some on-site high touch capabilities, something like hospitality, right? Hospitality, you know, is literally providing, you know, physical event space, services, food, beverage, setting up those types of things. Like there's no real good way to change that unless you get rid of hospitality services. Some firms are, right? They're just deciding, hey, we can do everything like we're doing right now over Zoom or virtual meetings. But in general, you know, that's something that can't be done. Now, the other things, you know, the work that's being done is more digital records, more digital, you know, actual document productions, reprographics, scanning, word processing. These are things that are being done virtual anyway. They don't really require someone to be in the firm's physical environment. There's a little bit of, you know, having that is a little bit of vestige of the, you know, the ways of working in 2019 and still figuring out where we're going moving forward. A lot of firms are sometimes, you know, notoriously slow to adopt, you know, new ways of working. I think you would not find too many people who call law firms sort of bleeding edge. You know, they're more kind of on the other end of the bell curve when it comes to adopting, you know, these new ways of working. But with these so as firms become more virtual and have less on-site presence and less people coming in on a day-to-day basis, maybe they're coming in 3 days a week and those are three random days. Maybe they're coming in one day a week. You know, or I have not heard of too many firms requiring or intending to require 5 days back in the office all the time, every day, right? So if that's the case and more work is going to be done virtually anyway, you know, why not have it in a centralized service center that isn't located in your physical space? If you're emailing or scanning or doing something virtually anyway, why not send it to a center where that's what they do? It's more like a sort of a super center where they have more capabilities than you might have anyway, right? So if many firms are doing this and they're all sending it to one center, that in order to provide the services for their many different clients, that center is going to have robust capabilities, more than you're probably willing to pay for or install on your own in your own environment in many cases. Not all, but many cases. And so you could increase the capabilities of what you're able to get done. Two, you, as I spoke about in the article, by sending it to a offsite space, you can then, you can, many law firm clients are more willing to pay the costs of sending it to a space like that as sort of a pass-through billing cost. So in other words, you could then convert that cost to you into a charge to your client and get that compensated. So your cost to yourself goes down. So you increase capabilities, you lower your cost, and you could either for your previous on-site space where you had this set up, you could repurpose that space into something, you know, for the firm. So there's a real estate benefit to it, or, you know, it helps you downsize your real estate footprint to begin with, since you don't need that space on site anymore. There's a lot of benefits and a lot of, you know, good logic that goes into it. I think it's just a matter of adoption right now. And so firms, like I said, they're not quite there yet, but I think this could be an interesting area for them to start thinking about.
So what can firm administrators do to get there and make these adjustments?
Well, yeah, no, so that's a great question because, law firms, you have, you know, management committees, you have, you know, chief operating officers, administrative officers, CEOs, all you know, managing partners. You have a lot of different personalities and thoughts for how a firm should run. And so, as a client, you know, that we work with, you know, I think that, you know, it's having that executive sponsor who kind of will lead the charge and see the benefits of looking at something like this and getting adoption or buy-in from your counterparts, you know, the other people who are involved in making decisions like this. You know, none of it's going to happen overnight. But I think as, you know, we become this new way of working, these new realities sort of become more set in stone, you know, and as I think people kind of realize, hey, this is just the way the world is going to be. You know, they need to start taking a good hard look at things like this, because it's going to affect your bottom line. And if you're looking at ways to be more efficient, more cost effective, you know, these are things that that move the needle. So yeah, I think, you know, having that executive sponsor, getting buy-in, someone like my company, who's sort of this third party, unbiased partner to a lot of these firms, you know, I can say something like this, and that may gain a little more traction than would someone with a vested interest that maybe they see as having a slanted point of view. That can be helpful as well, you know, to have someone like that kind of come in from the outside and say, hey, look, like, this is the way the wind is blowing. You should really consider this. And I think those are all ways to address it.
So as we head out of the pandemic and look toward the future, do you see these labor market challenges abating at all? And what other solutions could be coming up on the horizon?
So, yeah. So, I think we've got a lot of data now, like well over a year, you know, year and a half of data that kind of shows that things are kind of where they are right now. Are they abating? You know, I would say if you would have talked to me a month ago, I would have been a little more questioning. But lately, you know, in some of the places I've been, some of the people I've talked to, I think there are folks who are seeing things improve a little bit. Hiring's getting a little bit better. Now, is that a result of new ways of attacking it, or just because the market is shifting? Who's to say? I think we're still in the early stages there. But even if the market is showing some sort of swing back to what it was pre-pandemic, I'd argue that you don't want to go back to those old ways of working anyway. You want to take into account what the learnings of the past 2 years have been. I think that just makes good sound business sense. So even if it is abating, don't rest on your laurels, right? Keep doing the things that you need to do in order to improve. And then in terms of solutions coming up on the horizon, I mean, you know, technology is always changing, improving, helping people do things differently and better. You know, there's all these workflow tools or things like digital mail that are now really being considered and adopted that will change the way that we work. You know, something like, when I say digital mail, that means, you know, you don't have to be in a certain place to receive your envelope or your pleading or whatever opposing counsel is sent to you. It can all be done through your virtual workspace. And things like that are going to impact and further refine how people work. So, when we refer to workflow tools, again, you know, creating these virtual workspaces where people can get everything that they need to get done from the comfort of their home and not in an office space, you know, as these things improve and gain more widespread adoption, I think that, you know, those are always growing and changing, and service providers are always bringing these ideas and technologies to the attention of their partners or partner firms. I do expect there to be a lot of change, you know, over the next year or so in the outsourced labor market, ways of working, and how partnerships are formed.
Great. Well, I appreciate all the information that you provided today, Ben. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to our listeners and subscribers for tuning in. If you like the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss an episode. As always, you can learn more about ALA on alanet.org. Until next time.